Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
Good day, friends. This is Adam Mixon, the content curator with the Ministry Collaborative, and I'm visiting today with my friends Laura Murray and Charles Maxell. And based on some conversations that we've been having since the first of the year, and in response to some of the blog posts that have been on our website over the last few months, we're going to be talking for a little while about discipleship and spiritual formation. But before we jump into that conversation, I would like for Laura and then Charles, introduce yourself to the folks who might be listening and tell us about your context.
Thanks, Adam, for having us. My name's Laura, and I am a pastor, but not in a traditional pastoral role. So I serve as a spiritual director. So I work with directees and in group spiritual direction and individual spiritual direction. And what that is simply is that we pay attention to God and the directee's life together. So it's a prayer practice, and I pay attention to their life with them. And I also do that in retreat form and develop leaders to help host retreats. And then I also work with the Fuller Center for Spiritual Formation, in which we design cohorts for spiritual formation, as well as content that's online for learning, and then learning together and reflecting what we're learning about ourselves, about God, about our ministry context. And so shows up in a few different places, but I get to pastor in those places, and it's a joy.
Good stuff. Charles Maxell Jr., thank you, Adam, for inviting me to be a part of this conversation. I'm the senior pastor of a wonderful church called the Breakthrough Fellowship in Smyrna, Georgia, which is on the outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And my wife and I actually started this ministry almost 14 years ago as a Bible study in our house. Had no intention of actually starting a church. Actually just wanted to do a Bible study with some friends. Eventually, we opened it up to have our garage become kind of our children's ministry playground. That turned into an opportunity for us to do ministry that way. We did that about almost 3 years as I finished seminary. I was doing it part-time because my other job is I'm a managing director of a global risk management service company. And so I kind of have dual responsibilities. And then we did the unthinkable. I decided not to listen to my wife and decided to go and rent out 2 movie theaters. We started a service in 2 movie theaters. People showed up. We enjoyed that. And for every other week for about 8 months, we decided to continue to do that. And people kept showing up, thank God. And eventually we decided to go every Sunday. And we've been doing that for the past 13 years. And so God can bless even the blind and the babies. And sometimes we're both of those. And so we're happy to be doing ministry and doing life with people.
Wow. Thank you all for sharing that. It seems like you all have something in common in the realm of the entryway. Charles, you said something about really just wanting to have a Bible study in your home. And Laura, you talk about doing spiritual direction kind of on an individual and then on a small group level. I wonder if there's something in both of you all's past that informed the way you sought to go about doing ministry, something that formed you that you kind of just leaned into as far as living out practically in the work that you do. Could you say something about that, either one of you in turn?
I grew up in a very traditional ministry context. My father pastored in the Presbyterian Church for 40 plus years. My father-in-law pastored in the African Methodist Episcopal Church until his retirement this past year. My brother-in-law pastors right now. My mother is in ministry. My uncle is in ministry. My wife's grandfather was in ministry, and she's in ministry. And so ministry is, as I tell people all the time, some people are doctors. We're kind of ministers and pastors. That's what we do. I was kind of late to the game. You know, I kind of tell people I'm the Matthew when it comes to the disciples. I actually was informed by my father and my father-in-law, hey, make sure that you do stuff outside of ministry. And so God just really kept calling me back to it. And I came kicking and screaming. But then I also just had over my head the formal aspect of what it meant to be a pastor. And that was really heavy upon my own formation. But one of the things I really wanted to do is make sure that when we did ministry, it was speaking to people who were sometimes not so much on the outskirts of ministry itself or the church, people who knew God, but really the church just wasn't working for them. And that really was the impetus behind us doing the Bible study. And really that's been kind of the formation of our ministry. I mean, the reason why we call it the Breakthrough Fellowship is that, you know, one of our underlying principles is that we want to help broken people find wholeness through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And that wording in and of itself was problematic for some people because the whole issue of brokenness. But as I tried to explain to people, the way it was revealed to me by the Spirit was that brokenness is anything that separates you from God. And so that could be your job, that could be your career, that could be ambition. And the people that I was interacting with in the course of my professional life, that's what they were struggling with. They had a need for faith, but they didn't know how to connect that faith with practical needs. And our ministry really has just become an outpouring of connecting those practical issues and living with the issues that they're dealing with and how to help them create some level of spiritual formation.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I would say one key element in mine is nearness and staying close. So being close to people and their stories. And so in spiritual direction, you have that nearness that I think is needed. People don't always talk about how they're near to other people. People don't talk about when they're guiding somebody or mentoring somebody. Usually that's not up front. That's not what's seen, but that's really what's needed. And so spiritual direction is a way of staying close to another person and staying close to God with that other person. And that can happen in groups as well. The other thing that I would say besides the one-on-one spiritual direction is the retreats that we hold. And Charles, as you were talking about how the church started as a Bible study and kept on going because people kept on coming. A few years ago, I started digital silent retreats online and people would ask, okay, is that going to end after the pandemic? And people keep on coming and they keep on coming into these spaces. And it's a space where they come and they might be with strangers. They might be with somebody they saw a month ago. They meet with God and then they meet with one another. And we hold their stories in a small group space where they tell us what it was like to be in their solitude and silence with God. They tell what it was like to hit their resistances. They tell us what it was like to hear their frustrations. And it's a space that people can say things that they don't think that they can say in the church. Now, I do think there are pockets in the church and there are a lot of churches starting to allow for those spaces and making the different programs to be vulnerable and honest. But what I find in being near to people, you allow them to speak and say things that they don't feel safe saying if they're in the church context, at least the church context that I've been in. And so there's something about nearness and being close with that I think is significant and really matters when it comes to formation or discipleship.
I think one of the things that we're really trying to dispel in this age is people think of church and they think of it not being safe. And I try to tell people the church is still safe because the church is, in essence, the embodiment of Jesus Christ. The issue is that people are not safe. And so what we need to do is reframe people's perspective of the church, because the issue is a lot of people have a negative perception of the church because the people inside have not created those safe spaces. And so you're absolutely right, Lord, that we have to, in essence, create a diagram for people to understand when you come into this context, there is a certain level of decorum that you need to have, a certain level of interaction that you need to have, a certain level of love you need to have for each other in order for that space to be created. If you ask me what I think sometimes this group of believers truly struggles with, is separating the church from the people. And I'm not saying that people are bad, but because of our own humanness, we need to really separate those two ideas out and really challenge people to create the safe space, which they all need. Because I think that's one of the issues that I see, is that people need these safe spaces, and we need to make that happen.
Yeah, it's fascinating hearing you all talk about this and talk about your deep roots in the church. Part of my story is that I did not grow up with those deep roots in the church. So when I came to the church, my assumption was that everybody loves Jesus. And because everybody loves Jesus, everybody's going to love me. And after a few years of being connected to a church, I started asking questions, which were sometimes welcome. Sometimes met with an eye roll and a deep sigh, like, here we go again. I got questions about, if this is what Jesus did and how Jesus did, then why are we doing this like this or like that? I don't know, Charles, what it was that kept me from heading for the hills or dissociating or leaving the church. But I think you all are tapping into something about church that I wonder if we could say more about. What is it about the program of the church that does not afford broad, generous, safe spaces? What is it? Because there's obviously something missing. Mm-hmm. How would you name that?
I found helpful a book called The Critical Journey, and it's by three authors. One woman named Janet Hagberg, and she talks about the stages of faith. And she talks about the first three being learning, coming to Christ, being excited about it. And then she talks about stage four, in which stage four, there's a wall. And there's a wall that you can't get through by your own effort. It's a wall that you can't dig under, go over. You have to go through this wall. And the only way to go through that wall in your life of faith is by surrender. You can't perform. You can't produce. You can't learn more. It's not about competence or effectiveness. And she says that often what happens in the church, and I know we're using that kind of big and broad, but what happens in the church is that we're so used to doing one through three really well, we haven't done the fourth. And the people that have gone through that fourth stage and that surrender, well, that doesn't necessarily look productive or look effective or look successful. And so there are those people in the church that know how to go through that wall. But what the church does is they say, well, just go back and do one through three. Just go back and you'll be fine. And well, people aren't fine because what's on the other side of the wall is freedom and joy and goodness and the fruit of the, it's beautiful on the other side of the wall. And we go through these walls over and over again. So we don't just have one moment of surrender in our life. As a Christian, we know there's surrenders that we go through. And so what she would say is that the church keeps on going back. And then she would say that we need the people that have gone through the surrender over and over again as an act of faith and seen what's on the other side to then help people go through stage four and the wall. But our programs tend to send people back to one through three. I read some of the stuff in Kurt Thompson, who talks about confessional communities. You see this in some of the ministries like Celebrate Recovery, like they're doing this work of going through the wall. So you're seeing some of it happening in the church. And it just seems that there just needs to be more and more and more of it.
That's fascinating. I wonder if I could ask, tug on that just a little bit and ask you, when you talk about the wall, is the wall surrender itself or say more about that?
Well, it's a practical thing, mm-hmm. right? It's a practical something in your life that God is saying, let go and trust me. So it's a practical surrender. Is that helpful?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about someone who might be listening and they want a name. Mm-hmm. What is that wall? What is that hurdle? And to Charles's earlier point, sometimes the hurdle is the relationships with the people who are journeying with you.
Mm-hmm. One hurdle that I've seen mm-hmm. is that we've had a lot of bench warmers, as I like to call them, people who attend church, but really don't become the church. And so one of the things that we try to really push people on is that we're not going to over-program you, but we are going to push you towards relationships. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about membership, but we want to talk about belonging. Mm-hmm. We want you to attend, but we want you to actually be an active servant of Jesus Christ. I think once we get beyond kind of the programming and the stuff that we do for church, if you ask me, one of the things that we need to do today that this generation is looking for is they're looking for authenticity, and everyone uses that word. But sometimes we just need to return back to basics, and mm-hmm. basics is loving on people, doing God's work, mm-hmm. being kind, mm-hmm. preaching the gospel, not preaching feelings. Mm-hmm. We have a generation that wants self-help instead of what the word of God says. Mm-hmm. And we as proclaimers of the word have to be okay to be sometimes anti-cultural. Mm. To preach the word of God and not trying to be popular. Mm. And I'm not saying you don't preach something that's not applicable to people, but I think sometimes we chase popularity more so than we chase the true gospel.
Mm. Wow.
Well, and Charles, it's that faithfulness, right?
That's
that
right.
Gives us a framework, right? It's the consistency that's and right. the faithfulness, and it's not exciting necessarily all the time, or it's not, you know, I was reading an article the other day on having kids name their emotions isn't always the best thing. And I'm a big emotional person, so I highly value them. But just keep on staying faithful to the things
right.
that you know, just the basics.
That's right.
Going back to those basics, and that there is a need for those basics alongside that authenticity that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a thirst for it. There's a thirst for it.
Mm. This whole idea that you all are expressing about belonging and pushing people toward relationship is important. It's so important, especially in times as fraught as ours are.
Yeah.
Where people tend to find one thing that they disagree with somebody about. And then all of a sudden, they can't agree about anything. If we don't agree on this, then we can't associate on anything else, which is in some ways antithetical to the gospel.
That's right.
That we declare. But it seems to me that what you all are saying offers us a way forward that is a healing way and a way of maintaining community when you got to deal with messy people or people who are as imperfect as you are.
I think that's it. I think if we all remember that we all are imperfect, then there's no one we can not have community with. There's no one we cannot communicate with. There's no one that we cannot find belonging with. And if we create those spaces, then we create safe spaces for people to be, for people to be authentic, for the healing to happen, and most importantly, for the Holy Spirit to bring the transformation that's necessary for this generation.
Wow.
I'll add to that. Something that I've been convicted by lately is those places that I have belonging, how much do I expect them to be perfect?
Yeah.
And how much do I expect them? And I'm going to use another word with perfect, and that's stable. Do I expect them to be stable all the time? But the reality is that no environment's perfect and it's unstable. Now, I'm not advocating that you stay in a dangerous place, but I am saying that no place is perfect. And for me to give grace to the space,
yeah,
give grace to the people, yeah, in there. And so that I felt is my work to do lately, is to say, okay, it's not perfect, but there is love there and you're loved there.
Wow, that's fascinating and deeply encouraging. And it is counter to the way that culture is kind of leaning right now, which means as old and as irrelevant as the church has been labeled, we really do have something different to offer to this world. And I'm so grateful for you all sharing those insights with us today.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.